Chapter 4. One of Tony's hands wound into his hair, angling his head, and the other moved down his back over his spine to grip his hip, fingers splaying downwards, pulling him closer until he was pressed full length against Tony, and there was nothing chaste about this now. The feel of Tony, fully clothed, pressed against his naked flesh, did nothing to help calm him. There was certainly no doubting Tony's interest. Then Tony's mouth was on his, and all rational thought flew out of Steve's mind as Tony's tongue darted over his lips, licking and tasting, before his hand moved to cup Steve's jaw and lightly pressed down, opening his mouth. As soon as he did, Tony's tongue swept in, and he heard a moan that must have come from him, though he had no conscious thought of doing it, and somehow his arms were wrapping around Tony, pulling him even closer, as Tony's tongue plunged deeper, warring with his own. It was kissing, only in the fact that it fell into that general category, because this was nothing like Steve had ever experienced before. The way Tony's tongue moved through his mouth, caressing and seeming to try to delve into every part of him, stealing Steve's breath. When Steve let slip an involuntary groan, it was enough to make Tony's movements even wilder, his hands grasping and roaming all over Steve's body, as if trying to map it out and commit it to memory. He found himself pressed slowly back towards the bed, until the back of his knees hit the mattress and he was suddenly falling, rather ungainly, flat on his back, Tony standing above him. The shadows cast in the room hid Tony's features, the glow of the moonlight showing only an outline, but Steve watched as Tony unwound his bow tie and removed his jacket. So apparently there was a graceful way to take off a tuxedo. Who knew? Tony stopped undressing for a moment and leaned over Steve, bracing his hands on either side of Steve's head and dipping his mouth down for another kiss, licking lightly at Steve's bottom lip before taking it into his mouth and sucking, leaving Steve gripping the sheets with both hands, his cock riding high and hard between them. Tony still hadn't touched him there, and he spared a thought to wonder at that, since he seemed to like touching him so much. Even now, Tony's hands were skimming this way and that over his body, which had apparently decided to stop listening to his mind at all and was squirming on the bed, lifting and searching for Tony's touch. Tony unzipped his pants and kicked them off, then did the same with his boxers, and now there was definitely no doubt about Tony's level of interest. His cock was rigid with need, bumping up against the flat of his stomach, still covered by his undershirt. Steve let his fingers glide over the bottom edge of Tony's shirt, wanting nothing more at that moment than to finally feel Tony's skin against his. But Tony stilled his hesitant movement and drew his hand away. "I'll leave this on," he said. There was an accident. You don't need to worry about it." Steve frowned at that, but nodded and moved his hands away. He quickly forgot anything but sensation a moment later when Tony brushed up against him, his cock full and hard, rubbing against Steve's leg. He may have whimpered, he wasn't sure, but whatever it was, it must have been okay, because he saw Tony dip his head to his chest with a deep groan as he ground his cock against Steve. But it wasn't enough, not nearly enough. And Steve reached up to pull Tony closer, which seemed to surprise him for a moment, but he recovered quickly and lowered himself on the bed next to Steve, leaning down to kiss his way along Steve's jaw and down his neck. Should I? Steve tried to ask, his hand stuttering out towards Tony's cock, but Tony shook his head and dipped his mouth back down to Steve's throat. "Okay, then." He wasn't sure what he was supposed to be doing here, but he couldn't stop himself from arching his back towards Tony's mouth as he licked and sucked his way down Steve's neck and over his collarbone. Tony paused in his ministrations and looked up at Steve and then down where Steve's cock bobbed between their bodies, and Steve knew he should be embarrassed. But he didn't care if Tony would just touch him for God's sake, and he heard a huff of soft laughter and realized he might have said that out loud. As if from the end of a tunnel, he heard Tony remove something from the nightstand and rub his hands together, and then whatever mumbled apology he might have uttered for being so needy was swallowed back by a cry as Tony wrapped his warm hand around Steve's cock and rubbed his callous thumb over the length, tracing the slit on the head and finding it wet with pre-cum, spreading it in circles, wetting the head and rubbing in a gentle rhythm that had Steve bucking his hips into Tony's hand without any thought to what he was doing. Just, good God, the feeling of it. Tony returned to kissing his way down Steve's chest, tongue swirling around the sensitive skin shielding a nipple, before taking the butt into his mouth and pulling just enough to weave the line between pleasure and pain, while his hand continued to rub Steve's own lubrication over his cock, working his way up and down and rotating around to cup his length before Tony's fingers ghosted down to rub over his balls and then back up, moving in a faster motion now, up and down, and before Steve's mind caught up with what was happening, he was coming, in wild gasps and spurts in Tony's hand, his body bowing taut, and a sharp cry that he didn't recognize falling from his lips. He looked down in horror at the mess. Jesus, Rogers, congratulations. You've now managed the sexual fortitude of a 14-year-old, he thought. God, you're just... Tony was saying, staring down at him. And Steve let his head fall back against the bed and closed his eyes. Okay, so he was probably going to get kicked out, and who could blame Tony? This was hardly the way things were supposed to go. He motioned to grab a Kleenex from the nightstand, but Tony stopped him and got up from the bed, and great, just great. Could this be more humiliating? Tony returned a moment later with a soft towel, which, okay, that was nice, he supposed, reaching for it. But Tony batted his hand away and bent to start gently cleaning Steve's belly and thighs. Steve had no idea what to say or do, so he just lay there watching Tony as he finished his task. The towel quickly joined Tony's tucks on the floor, and Steve had to bite the inside of his lip to stop himself from saying something about that. Then Tony was kissing him again, just lightly on the lips, and to Steve's confusion, pressing a long kiss to his forehead. You're amazing. God, you're beautiful, Steve. So responsive, just so good for me, Steve. So very, very good. You did so good. Tony cut himself off. Steve was left completely confused, but he was smart enough to keep his mouth shut. Tony went back to kissing him again, and Steve thought he could get used to this, the way Tony's goatee scraped his chin and brushed over his lips, leaving them raw and swollen. Tony's hands had picked up their undulations as well, smoothing over his stomach and down his thigh, then back up again to spread across his hip and down the curve of his ass as Tony's kiss deepened to something more. Steve felt a slight pull and found himself eagerly rolling towards Tony's embrace and couldn't contain a gasp as he was pressed against Tony's hard cock as Tony's tongue darted deeper into his mouth. Tony drew back, and Steve's mouth followed him of its own volition, he would swear. Then Tony was moving on the bed, pushing pillows off and covers down haphazardly. Steve watched in a daze, still feeling sated and languid. Tony turned to look at him, eyes glittering, pupils blown so wide there seemed to be no white left. And Steve blinked himself to realization. Oh. Okay, then. Steve felt something low and heavy settle in the pit of his stomach, some sort of odd anticipation that he wasn't sure if it was about getting it over or something else. Moving up the bed, he saw that Tony had left a pillow in the middle, and he had the absurd thought that this was thoughtful. He lay down on his stomach with the pillow under his hips and turned his head in Tony's direction. He felt Tony's hand run through his hair, and then Tony was moving to position himself behind him. He spread his legs to give him access and felt Tony nudge his knee up, then lean down to press a kiss to his hip bone. It'll be easier this way, Tony said quietly, his voice low and strained as if every word took effort. Steve nodded and shifted his knees up, spreading himself further. He heard Tony rustle about in the bed and the squelch of the tube again. He couldn't help but tense up as he felt Tony's hand rub gently over the cleft of his ass, but he didn't move away, didn't so much as twitch, when a finger was pressed into him to the knuckle, but instead forced his body to relax and allow the intrusion. Tony pushed his finger further in, and it felt odd, true, but not bad, odd, just different. And then he moved it, and oh Jesus fuck, that was good. A second finger probed at his entrance and then was pressed slowly in, and he definitely felt the burn with that one as it stretched him open. He hissed out a breath he hadn't realized he'd been holding as Tony moved his fingers around, hooking them deeper and then scissoring them in swift motions. Steve let out a moan that was part pain, part need, and then felt a third slick finger added, and okay, that was less fun. But then Tony was moving them, pressing them deeper, stretching him wide, and then a quick, sharp, upward jab, and Steve felt the breath leave him and his vision blacken, and he was sure he shouted, but he had no idea what. Tony was pressing quick kisses down the line of his spine while his fingers did things to Steve's body that Steve's mind couldn't comprehend, and he could hear him murmuring things, good things, but he couldn't focus enough to understand what it was, just that it was good. Steve was good, and it was all just too much. But when he didn't think he could take any more, Tony's fingers were gone, and he felt empty and incomplete, and felt himself press his hips upward and spread his knees wider, and knew, God, he knew what he must look like, and what Tony must think of him, and what he was. And it wasn't like that was going to be a shock for Tony, considering. But Steve couldn't help the rush of shame he felt, any more than he could stop himself from letting the words tumble from his lips in quick, stuttering gasps. Please, Tony, please, he repeated, beyond caring what he sounded like. After all, it was what he was, at least for the night. God, Steve, just... He heard Tony take a shuddering breath, and he knew what he was behaving like, wanted to stop, but couldn't help himself, too overwhelmed by what Tony was doing to care. And then he felt something else pressing against his entrance, hard and insistent, and groaned through the pressure, the burn, the stretch. God, too much. Good, yes. And then the head of Tony's cock was inside him. And he let out a breath and a groan and gripped the sheets as Tony pressed in further, then further still, burying himself to the hilt inside Steve. Tony stayed motionless for a moment, then began to pull back, and Steve felt his body try to follow him of its own accord. But then Tony was pushing forward again, surging up inside him, filling him, and he was so full, so very full, and then again and again, and Tony was thrusting, long, slow strokes, but it wasn't enough. Steve made a strangled sound and pressed his hips back, spreading his knees further, and heard Tony loose a choking gasp, and felt the tempo of the thrust speed up, Tony's hips snapping in quick, sharp movements, then felt Tony's weight shift a bit as Tony lowered himself, bracing his hands on either side of Steve and began pumping at just the right angle. And there, oh God, there. And Steve buried his head into the mattress to keep from screaming, and then felt Tony's thrust turn wild and lose all sense of rhythm. And then there was a spurt of warmth inside him as Tony pumped into him a few last times before his head lolled down against Steve's back, his breath coming in short, panting gasps. Good Christ, he heard Tony swear, and felt him collapse boneless onto Steve's back. He wasn't sure how long they lay like that, with Tony inside him, splayed on top of him, breathing heavily. He felt Tony pull out and heard him move from the bed to another room that Steve assumed was the bathroom. A few minutes later, he saw Tony return, pick his boxers off the floor and redress, then sit on the edge of the bed. He wasn't sure what was supposed to happen now. He could still feel tremors running through his body, his breathing still shallow and strained. Of course, it wasn't like they were going to cuddle, Steve thought, as rational, higher brain function began to return. Tony was clearly done. He was probably just waiting for Steve to catch up. He shifted up and then slowed his motions because, wow, okay, he could definitely feel that. Sitting up rather gingerly, he looked at the clock, almost midnight. He realized that he had not thought the logistics of this out at all when he'd agreed to Tony's offer. He had exactly $7 in his wallet, certainly not enough to get a cab from wherever he was, back down to the apartment he shared with Bucky and Clint in East L.A. He actually had no idea how this was supposed to work. So I'll just be going now. I mean, if that's okay, he said. He saw Tony's back stiffen, but then Tony nodded jerkily. Of course. Happy will get you wherever you need to go. Jarvis will see to it. If there's anything else you need, Tony responded, his voice oddly flat. No, thanks. Thank you. Jeez, get it together. I'm fine. I'll just go, Steve said, scrambling from the bed now. His clothes were in the living room, so he grabbed the discarded towel and, without looking back, moved out the door as fast as he could, closing it quietly behind him. He quickly made his way to the living room, where his pile of clothes waited. Dressing in a hurry, he didn't bother with the jacket or many of the tiny, frustrating buttons. Looking around, Steve remembered that Tony had said someone called Jarvis would help him. Tony had said someone named Mr. Jarvis would help him, but Steve hadn't seen anyone else around the house earlier. Maybe some kind of butler? God, how humiliating. Staring at the empty room and feeling utterly stupid, but with no idea what else to do, he called out softly, Mr. Jarvis?
Hello, sir. This is Jarvis. How might I be of assistance? Came a disembodied British voice.
Jesus, Steve said, jumping and spinning around, looking for the identity of the mysterious voice.
A common mistake, sir, but it's pronounced Jarvis. I am merely Mr. Stark's AI. I run the house and see to Mr. Stark's personal affairs, the voice responded primly.
A snarky, slightly blasphemous artificial intelligence runs Tony's house?
Of course it does. Clearly fallen down the rabbit hole, Steve thought.
I need to get home, Steve said, feeling even more stupid than before because now he was actually talking to the ceiling.
Of course, sir. I've already requested Mr. Hogan bring the car around. He will take you wherever you need to go.
The voice, Jarvis, Steve thought in amazement, replied. Sure enough, minutes later, Steve saw headlights outside in the drive. Having no idea what to say to Tony or how he was supposed to arrange payment, he left one of the cream-embossed business cards of the agency, black spider hovering above a phone number, sitting on the kitchen counter. He stepped out into the crisp night air and watched as Tony's chauffeur, Mr. Hogan, the voice had called him, hopped out and opened the door to a Rolls Royce. He wondered if Snipe could get any stranger. On the drive back, he learned he'd been in Malibu, and Happy, which was Mr. Hogan's name, was the genial sort who liked to talk and loved all things sports. So they spent most of the ride debating the relative merits of the Dodgers' pitching roster. Steve had to stop and wonder what Happy thought about this, taking home someone Tony hired for the evening, but Happy treated him as nicely as if he was any other guest of Tony's. When they reached his apartment building, he hopped out and wished Happy a good night, thanking him profusely for the ride. He supposed he should tip him, but he needed $2 for the bus to work in the morning and figured the remaining $5 would have been an insult. He found himself slowing as he walked up the steps to the fifth-floor apartment he was currently sharing with Bucky, his best friend, and Clint, someone Bucky had met at work. They all worked for one of the local construction companies, working on office buildings downtown. Bucky had gotten him the job shortly after he arrived from New York. Bucky worked on the welding crew. Clint did heating and air conditioning work. It was Clint who had first suggested this particular line of work, saying he'd done it a few times and how it was a great way to make a quick few $100. Steve had brushed the idea off at first as ridiculous, but as things came closer and closer to a point with his mom and the situation with his finances got more and more desperate,
It had started to sound like a more attractive option. Bucky, on the other hand, was adamantly opposed to the whole idea. He'd argue strenuously against this. But when it came time tonight to get ready, Bucky had helped him do the bow tie, knowing Steve's fingers would never be able to finesse it. He wasn't sure he wanted to face Bucky right now. He wasn't sure he was ready to deal with everything that had happened tonight, but knew he couldn't hide anything from Bucky. Never had been able to. He let himself into the apartment and made his way as silently as possible to the couch where he slept. When his mom had her accident, Bucky had been kind enough to offer Steve a place to crash for a bit while she recovered. It was supposed to be a temporary thing, but the weeks had turned into months as Steve learned all about traumatic brain injury and other phrases like maximum medical improvement. Sinking to the couch, Steve put his head in his hands. The whole evening was completely messed up. He had no idea what to make of his evening with Tony. It still held some dreamlike quality now in the darkness of the night that he was sure would fade come the morning. But for now, he decided he'd hold on to that. Looking up, he caught sight of Bucky leaning in the doorway between the living room and his bedroom. "You're back," Bucky observed succinctly. "Yeah." "You okay?" Bucky asked. Steve honestly intended to say yes, but it came out as, "I don't know." He felt the couch dip as Bucky sat down beside him. "You know I said this was a terrible idea." "Yeah, I know, Buck," Steve said, because he'd heard this spiel before. Bucky was shaking his head. "Not because I'm all against it, you know. I mean, I know Clint does it, and hey, consenting adults and all that. I'm not one to talk." "No," Steve said with a slight smile. "You're not. Are you even here by yourself tonight?" Bucky grinned. "What do you think?" Steve just shook his head in amazement. But the thing is, Steve, you're not me. And you're not Clint. This isn't you. And you are not okay with it. I don't care what you say. I've known you practically your whole life. Sex for money? That is so not you," Bucky said. And despite the flippancy of his words, Steve could see the concern in his gaze. Steve let his head dip down to his chest. "Well, if you have any better ideas, I'm all ears." The silence was answer enough, he supposed. "Was the guy okay?" Bucky asked. Steve cleared his throat. "Well, I kind of traded. I mean, the first guy, well, he was okay, I guess, but I met this other guy, and he was nice," Steve stammered. "Nice," Bucky repeated, completely unconvinced. "Yeah, nice," Steve said. "Okay, whatever you say, man," Bucky responded, clapping Steve on the back and getting up from the sofa. "Try to get some sleep, dude. You look like crap," Bucky said, heading for his bedroom. "Oh, and the hot water's out again," he smiled. "Welcome back." "Just great." Steve stretched out on the sofa as best he could. He knew that tomorrow he was going to have to face the music with Ms. Romanoff. He'd abandoned the client he'd been assigned and gone off with some random guy he met, all because the guy had asked nicely. He was so fired. Truthfully, he couldn't bring himself to care. Whatever it had been with Tony, the idea of doing that again with someone new, he just couldn't. Bucky was right. He wasn't built like him or Clint. He couldn't trade partners every other night and be okay with it, consenting adults or not. The thought of getting into another limo with someone like Hammer made his stomach twist into knots. He had literally no idea what he would do about his mom's situation. But that didn't change the fact that this was obviously not the solution, however desperate he'd become. Slowly relaxing once he'd made a decision, he drifted off to a deep sleep. So deep, in fact, that he didn't wake up at his usual crack of dawn and consequently missed the 7:05 bus to downtown and was late to his shift on the construction crew, which resulted in quite the lecture about punctuality and responsibility and do you want to keep this job, let alone get extra shifts, Rogers. On the construction elevator up, he adjusted his hard hat and tried to focus on the day ahead. But his mind was full of his evening with Tony. His body was full of dull ache that was somehow satisfying. He kept rubbing at the place on his collarbone, where he knew there was a mouse-shaped bruise, the slight prickle of pain every time he rubbed it, a reminder of last night. Not to mention the phone call he knew he was going to have with Ms. Romanoff. She was scary enough as it was. Telling her he'd ignored pretty much everything she'd told him his first night out was not something he was looking forward to. At all. This was probably not the best day to be working with heavy machinery. Once his shift ended, he caught the bus home and managed a quick, cold shower before picking up Bucky's phone, having long ago given up his own, and working up the nerve to call the number on the card with the spider on it. He prayed for voicemail, but the phone gods were not with him. "I wondered when I'd hear from you," Ms. Romanoff answered. Steve held the phone away from his ear, startled.
Hi, Ms. Romanoff.
I wanted to talk to you about last night," Steve ventured.
"I'll bet," Ms. Romanoff said.
"I got a rather disgruntled call from Mr. Hammer last night. He claimed you left him high and dry at the gala last night. That is a problem, Steve."
"I know. I know, really.
Look, I'm so sorry, really. I didn't mean to cause a problem for you, I swear. I just... Well, I guess I didn't really hit it off with Mr. Hammer. And then I met this guy, and he said he'd pay more, so..." He made himself stop rambling.
"Yes, yes. Well, you understand that we have a reputation to uphold with our clients. They expect to have the evening we promised them. And we can't have our people making their own deals at the last minute. It's bad for business, Steve," Ms. Romanoff said tersely. Steve sighed. This was going even worse than he'd imagined, and that was saying something.
"I know. I completely understand. I'm so sorry. And if I lost you business, well, I will certainly do everything I can to see that you're paid back. I swear. I should tell you, though, I don't think I'm cut out for this. I mean, I appreciate the opportunity and all, but I just don't think I can do this again," Steve finished.
"Well..." Ms. Romanoff began, as Steve noted that her voice sounded a bit strange.
The thing is, Steve, Tony Stark." Steve started at Tony's name, unsure what she meant.
"Tony Stark?" That sounded familiar somehow.
"Tony Stark is, well, let's just say he's a huge get. I know agency heads on 6 continents that would sell their own daughters to slavery to have Tony Stark on their client list. They've dangled their best in front of him for years, and he has never so much as nibbled. But you show up, and in one night, bam, I've got Tony Stark calling me."
Steve could hear the clear question in her voice, and then he managed to process what she was saying.
"Tony called her?"
"I'm going to have to comp Hammer a couple of freebies," she was saying.
Well, if I can, I mean, I could maybe pay." Steve tried, unsure what exactly he was offering.
"I told Stark I was billing him," Ms. Romanoff said with a low laugh.
That didn't sit well.
"I don't know that that's really fair. I mean, it wasn't Tony's fault that I left Mr. Hammer for the evening. It doesn't seem right to charge him for that," Steve said, frowning at the idea.
"Steve," she started, and he could tell her guard was up and she was being cautious now.
"Steve, Stark didn't care about the money. He said I could send Cirque du Soleil to Hammer and put it on his tab."
"Okay, well..."
Steve didn't know what to do with that.
It still didn't sit right with him. After all, he'd been the one to ditch Mr. Hammer. Tony'd had nothing to do with that, though he found that he was glad he hadn't said anything to Tony about why he'd been so eager to leave Hammer behind. He was about to argue more with Ms. Romanoff when she cut in.
"In fact, Stark didn't care about anything to do with the money, not the exorbitant amount I quoted him or anything else.
The one thing he did care about, was in fact quite insistent about to say the least, was that I was not under any circumstances to send you to Hammer."
Steve felt the silence hang heavy over the line. He wanted to offer some explanation to Ms. Romanoff,
some way to make that seem like no big deal, but was at a loss as to how to do that, because he really didn't know what it meant himself. He wants to book you again. Tonight? She said, a question in her voice. The fee I quoted him was insane, and he didn't so much as blink. This is a good opportunity for you, Steve. If you are agreeable, he'll send a car for you. Dress is casual. You'd just be going to his place. Tonight? Steve felt his inside swirl at the thought. Tony wanted to see him again. He swallowed heavily. He decided last night that he couldn't do this. He wasn't built this way. Bucky was right. This kind of thing. It was for other people, not him. He simply could not continue this. Okay, he heard himself say. What time?